So we left off yesterday, quick recap. We were trying to figure out, we talked about the concept of the Gezerah L'Gezerah, and we talked about why it would be that we have a hesitation or an absolute, or clearly it doesn't seem to be so absolute, aversion to building Gezerahs on top of Gezerahs. And we talked about various explanations and how some of them are premised on the assumption that we're dealing with rabbinic law, because a Gezerah, by default, by most common scenario, is an aspect of rabbinic law. But is there any logic to say that even when dealing with Torah law, we would not apply a Gezerah on top of the Gezerah? And we had a little bit of an approach to say, even within that, that maybe just the concept of a safeguard doesn't lend itself to being doubled up. We talked a little bit about how we could find that in other contexts. And then the whole need for the question is, what if you're dealing with a safeguard that is itself min haTorah? Such as, for example, Bishul Basu B'chalav. So we noted that there was at least one Achron, one major Achron, the Prima Gada, who asserted that if you combined two Gzeros Daraisa, they would not take effect on top of each other. What were the two Gzeros Daraisa that he was talking about? Anyone want to help me out?
Nazirudin
grapes, that was one of them. And what was the other one? Chatzi Shir, right? Having an incomplete amount. Each one, you have to prove your case independently before even talking about how they would combine. So Nazirudin grapes was a medrash that portrayed it as a Gzera Daraisa, you know, which logically we can understand, right? Why should we care about a Nazirudin grapes? Why is that contribute to his holiness? So presumably it's about intoxication, and the grapes are a step away from that. And Chatzi Shir is a more complex issue. It's a major machlokes achronim. If we wanted to actually discuss that sugya head-on, by the way, the name Chatzi Shir would become very ironic, because it's a very, very lengthy discussion. It would take a lot of time to go through even a little bit of the Makaris on that topic. I just showed you the Gemara, but it's a major, major discussion. But we noted that that phrase that appears in the Gemara, Chazi Litztrufe, so about Chatzi Shir, about half of the Achronim, or more, probably a good chunk of the Achronim understand it to mean that it's a siag. That you shouldn't be essentially the potato chip svara, that you can't have just one, but if you're going to start to have one, maybe you'll finish the whole package. So you shouldn't get started. And they assume nafkaminas of that, which again, we discussed our discomfort with that, but many assume that there are nafkaminas of that. So if you have a scenario, for example, where for whatever reason it's not practical or possible for you to complete a whole shir, so then many have suggested that a chatzi shir might be permissible in that case. So here, the Prima Gadim said, if you combine a gzeira and a gzeira here, if you combine a chatzi shir with grapes, that's going to be permissible for a nazir. And even Rav Yosef Engel, the big advocate of the Gzeira D'Raisa, he said, that's too much. How could it be that you can combine the two? So we started to say yesterday, well, maybe we could explain it logically. Maybe we could explain it a little bit from sources, sort of. We pointed to the Avos de Rav Nosson, that in the context of telling us to make Gezeros, points to Gezeros min haTorah, and says that we should look to Gezeros min haTorah, and maybe that's telling us that Chazal patterned their Gezeros after Gezeros min haTorah. The idea of called the Tikkun Rabbanan Ka'im Daraisa Tikkun, that Chazal patterned their laws after Torah laws. So here it's kind of taking it a step further, that they patterned their Gezeros after specifically the Gezeros that are from the Torah. And in this case, so maybe the idea of Ein Gozer Gezeira L'Gezeira, which it could be that that's something that Chazal just knew, doesn't even need a proof, doesn't seem to need any source. So maybe they got that because they understood it from the way that the Torah makes its Gezeira. So maybe even on a Torah level you have such an idea. So I left you with an assignment yesterday, and if anyone has a suggestion, But can you find a source in Rishonim that maybe is a basis for this? It was the hint was it was on your Makoros from the day before. Anyone have any possible candidates? I'll give you another hint. It's from Psachim. Give you another hint. It's Rabbeinu Tam in Psachim. So, yeah, Sam. Awesome! Sam, it's Iluyish. So, essentially, what was going on, just to give it a little bit of a context. So you saw the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak of Psachim. The Mishnah talks about things that are not pure chametz, but are derivatives of chametz, and that are learned out from the fact that the Torah, when it says that you're a chayiv for eating chametz, but it also has a language of kol machmetzes, that not only actual chametz you are chayiv for, but anything that comes from chametz also is prohibited. Even though you won't be chayiv kareis for it, but there's also a prohibition for anything that even comes from chametz. So, describing such items, the Mishnah has the language Elu Ovrim bePesach. That's the title of the third parak of Psachim. Elu Ovrim. So what does Elu Ovrim mean? So says Rashi over there, it means you violate. You violate the prohibition of Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotzeh. That is an Isser Daraisa to own Chametz on Pesach. And that, good to see you. That Isser Daraisa would apply, okay, Isser would apply to this also. So, that Isser applying here, Rabbeinu Tam found objectionable. Rabbeinu Tam quotes the Riva who agrees with Rashi, but he says you're both wrong. No offense. Why? So the language of Tosfos is hard to understand. So I'm suggesting an interpretation of this Tosfos, which is why it's not really so obvious. Maybe I should read you the language of Tosfos. I can call it up here. You'll see exactly how we're kind of interpreting it. Call up a Tosfos, okay? So Tosfos says as follows. So Elu over the Pesach. Perisha kuntris, lavor aleim v'bal yira bal yimatzah. That's Rashi. V'gam riva medaktek melashin ovrim demashim ovrim mina olam. And the riva says something similar. It means you have to destroy it because essentially it's bal yira bal yimatzah. You're seeing it like Rashi. V'ein nira l'Rabbeinu Tam. This does not sound like it's true to Rabbeinu Tam. That all of these are included from the riboy of this language of kol machmetzes. And it wouldn't even have been an issue for eating, were it not for the fact that the pasuk comes and includes it. And where should you get the idea that Palira Bayimatse there should be a prohibition of ownership? So the Nirul Rabbeinu Tam, the Elu Ovrim, it seems then said to Rabbeinu Tam, the Elu Ovrim Perisha Ochlin, the Ovrim Hainam El Shulchan. We don't mean the individual is in violation. We mean the food. And you should take it off the table. Delav V'nimechel Ninu, because you're not allowed to eat it on Pesach. Ava Balira Lekka. There's no prohibition of ownership. So, wouldn't blame you for not seeing anything jump out from this Tosfos. But, I think you can make a suggestion of what this Rabbeinu Tam is getting at. What's the machlokus here? Rashi says, Bal Yira, Bal Yimatzeh, and Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like that. Why should you not like that? So, keep in mind that Bal Yira, Bal Yimatzeh is, according to the Ram, also in our special category of Siag Doraisa. Right, it's actually, I think, the first thing on Rav Yosef Engel's list. So the Ram popularized this idea that the prohibition of ownership on Chametz is a siag min haTorah. And there are some who make the case that it's actually everyone who holds like this. This is not even just the Ran, but this is a widely agreed upon idea. That this is maybe the most compelling example, other than really explicit ones like Yichud. Yichud is maybe even more compelling, the fact that the Torah prohibits men and women who are prohibited to each other from being alone together. Also seems like a pretty explicit kind of gzeira d'oraisa. But here, this is a very strong case for a gzeira d'oraisa, that the Torah prohibits ownership of chametz, so that we should not come to do what we're really worried about, and that is eating chametz on Pesach. So maybe what Rabbeinu Tam is getting at here is that Bal Yirah is itself a step removed from the actual issue. Is itself a siag. What are we talking about in that Mishnah there? Kol Machmetzes. That's also a step removed. That's not real chametz either. So maybe that's also something siagish. Right? That the real issur is eating chametz. And as a harchaka, you also should stay away from chametz derivatives. And maybe that's this very unusual language that Rabbeinu Tam has, that if it weren't for the ribui, we wouldn't have the prohibition. If it weren't for the pasuk, we wouldn't have the prohibition. Well, if it weren't for the pasuk, we wouldn't have any prohibitions. Now, what does that mean? So I think what he means is that there's nothing inherently objectionable about the chametz derivatives on Pesach. It's something that we're going to prohibit because it keeps us away from something objectionable. So in other words, I think what Rabbeinu Tam is saying is that it doesn't make sense to combine Bal Yirah and Kol Machmetzes. You hear the words? That both of them, even though they're both Torah prohibitions, but they are both essentially distancing devices, and therefore there's no need to put one on top of the other. So to say that there should be an iser to own something which is itself not actual chametz but a derivative, that's too much. And that's why he's inclined to interpret the Mishnah a different way. So if that interpretation is correct, so maybe we have a precedent for the Prima Gadim in a Rishon. Maybe that's what Rabbeinu Tam is saying, that even on a Torah level, one harchaka on top of the other is too much. What do you think? Does it make sense? Okay. So now let's plug this back in even further to our discussion. So the Prima Gadim himself was saying this by Chatzi Shir, by grapes. Are there any active Nazirim in the room? Okay. So it's not so practical for you guys. So the question of whether you could have a chatzi shir by grapes, not so relevant to so many people here, at least today. But chatzi shir by bishul basar b'challav, that could be pretty relevant. And if you do the math, if you plug in all the parts, so if we're correct that bishul basar b'challav is applicable to the svara of siag d'oraisa, that bishul basar b'challav is the siag, so then it should come out that there should be, according to the Prima Gadim, no Isser Chatzi Shir by Bishul Basar B'Chalav. You hear? If you do the math, right? If the Chatzi, if Prima Gadim says there's no Isser of Chatzi Shir by grapes for a Nazir because of Siag L'Siag, so let's take out grapes for a Nazir and put in Bishul Basar B'Chalav. So then there should be no Isser Bishul Basar B'Challav by Chatzi Shir. So what does the Prima Gadim say about this? So the truth is he does talk about it, but he doesn't bring this far in. And there is a machlokas in general about whether the Isser of Bishul Basar B'Chalav applies to a Chatzi Shir. Chazanish was makel about this. Chazanish and his Chidushim Tuchulin and Daf Kuchas. The Menachas Chinuch, commenting on the Sefer HaChinuch, was Machmir. And many got involved. But it's interesting, so at least the Prima Gadim, in his discussion, you don't see him bringing this up. So why not? I'm not sure. So I wonder if maybe he doesn't accept the Kesef Mishnah. Maybe he doesn't accept the whole premise that if we approach this algebraically, right? If we approach this as an equation, so we just took one part out of the equation and replaced it with another, so why doesn't it work anymore? So maybe he doesn't agree that Bishul Basar B'Chalav is a siyag. This is a very uncommon straight algebraic sugya where you could just take one part and put it in the other and see if the parts match. So just parenthetically, so what are the considerations in terms of Chatzi Shir by Bishul Basar B'Chalav? So, in general, without getting, like I said, the sugya of Chatzi Shir is massive. Again, it's ironically named. It's a massive sugya. We could easily, if we wanted to, we could easily spend a month on Chatzi Shir without, without really getting anywhere. It's massive. But one of the concerns is like this, that if you believe that the concern of Chatzi Shir is that you're going to bring together two halves and you'll actually complete the picture. So, is that always relevant? There are some achronim, notably the Chacham Tzvi or Tzvi Ashkenazi, maintains that the Isser Chatzi Shir only applies by Yisuri Achila, only applies by Yisurim that are defined by eating. Now, there are Rishonim that sound like they are explicitly against that. You could answer how to interpret those Rishonim. Again, we're not going there today. But the question of should it apply only to an Isser of Achila and not by other things? So why should you say that? So one reason to say that is because if I do half an Aveira now, and I do half an Aveira an hour from now, does that make one full Aveira? How do you know? How do you know that there's any connection between what I did in the morning and what I did in the afternoon? Maybe?
Yeah, I was going to maybe say the other way, that it isn't. It's on Yom Kippur, mm-hmm. The whole idea that you eat it, is you wait a specific amount of time,
okay.
So it doesn't add up to it. So
okay, but you are specifically using an example
about
eating, right? Which is, now again, parenthetically, Yom Kippur happens to have a shear that's larger than Kazayas, but it doesn't affect what you're saying. But the fact that it's talking about eating is interesting, right? So in general, if you do any Aveira, I do an Aveira half in the morning, and then 2 hours later I do the other half. Did I do one complete Aveira? Or maybe we should say, no, I didn't do a complete Aveira. I did an incomplete Aveira, and I did another incomplete Aveira, and I have no actual complete Aveiras. Sam?
Does this discussion come up by Hotzah and Shabbos?
It does, but it's more complicated by Hotzah. I'm very happy to talk about all these things. We get just a little take this. These are fast. This is just an endless palace of different sugyas we could sell. Hotzah, there's all kinds of really beautiful, fascinating avenues you could go down.
Don't people say that it does, they do kind of add up with each other?
Not necessarily. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it's got some extra complexities when it comes to Hotzah. So, in general, one might say that, no, why should they combine? I did an incomplete Aveira when it was 10 o'clock in the morning. And I did another incomplete Aveira at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they got nothing to do with each other. Now, what Levi is pointing out is extremely relevant, that to say you're chayiv, let's say you're chayiv malchus for eating a kezias of chazer. So, or on Yom Kippur, again, this year is a little larger, but let's talk about Chazir for a second. So you chayav Malkus for eating a shear of a kazayis of Chazir. It's not really a full sentence. It's not the whole story. That there is, as Levi's pointing out, a time limit. That it has to be kedei achilas pras, in the amount of time it takes to eat a loaf of bread. How long is that? Depends how fast you are a bread eater, but halachically we translate that into something between 3 and 9 minutes, depending on which opinion you take. So when the women ask, because I say women because often a question asked by pregnant women, but it could be asked by any chola, when a person is sick on Yom Kippur and has a need to eat. So what Levi's referring to is that we try to ideally have them eat less than the shear. And that means two things. It means to eat an amount that's smaller than the shear, but also it means to watch the clock and to only have that amount within this period of time. Let's call it 9 minutes for argument's sake. And then after 10 minutes, then the clock starts over again. And then they could have another less than a shear. So you could argue that it's only by Yisuri Achila that you have this clock, that this time period, that brings together two separate actions. That normally if I do action A, and then later I do action B, they're two separate actions. Nothing should connect them. But there's a chiddush in the realm of Achila, that there's a concept of Kedei Achilas Pras, that when two bites are within the same Kedei Achilas Pras, it's as if it was all one action of Achila, and that all counts towards the same count. So there are some who would argue, the Prima Gaudium considers this point, that maybe when it comes to Achila, fine, so I have to worry that the two halves that I had are joined. So there's a prohibition to have a half a Zayas of Chazir, because maybe 2 minutes from now I'll have the other half. And they'll combine. But if I'm only cooking a half zayas of basar b'chalav, then what do we have to worry about? That 5 minutes from now I'll cook another half? But there's no connection between these two actions. And therefore there's nothing to prohibit. Because I don't have to worry. Once I've done it in too small an amount, then there's no possibility of it getting worse, this action is over. Anything I'm going to do 5 minutes from now is going to be something else. So I only have to worry about the potato chip issue when it comes to eating potato chips. I don't have to worry about the potato chip issue when it comes to cooking basar b'chalav potato chips. Because even if I were to cook the whole bag of basar b'chalav potato chips, if I do it in small amounts, maybe they don't combine. You hear the issue? So that's what the Prima Gaudium says, okay, maybe there's no Bishul Basar B'chalav Chatzi Shir issue. But he doesn't bring in his point about Siag L'Siag. Now there are those who would take the opposite approach. Reb Shulam Mikutno was a great Gaon 150 years ago. He was one, if you want to historically, he was one of the early supporters of the Heter Mechira, of the idea that you can sell land in Israel during the Shemitah year and have it not be subject to the prohibitions of Shemitah. So Shul Mikutno, he maintained, he says, no, the opposite is true. He thinks, actually, that normally, if I do two separate actions, they really would connect. And the Chiddush of Kedei Achilas Pras is the Chiddush Lakula, that when it comes to eating, there's an expiration. That after 10 minutes, the clock starts over again. After 9 minutes, the clock starts over again, however long it is. But by everything else, there's no clock at all. It just keeps counting. So therefore, you should think the opposite way. That not that it's harder to bring together two discrete actions, that they're automatically brought together. They all go on my record. So that's one question of whether there is a prohibition of Chatzi Shir when it comes to Bishul Basar B'chalav, and maybe all of that connects to this whole question of seeing it as a gezeirah. Should also add on once we're talking about Chatz Yishir and Bishul Basa B'chalav, that there's another whole corridor in the Chatz Yishir palace to consider. And that is, Chatz Yishir can be defined maybe different ways. It can be defined quantitatively, it can be defined qualitatively. So what if I talk about Chatz Yishir not in terms of how much food am I cooking, but what about how much am I cooking it? So let's say, for example, we know that for something to be considered cooked lahalacha, it has to be cooked k'maychel ben jusai. It has to be cooked to the level that even a robber, whose name was ben jusai, it's a big legacy he has in history that the shir for Bishul gets named after him. He was in a hurry because he was always worried about getting caught, so he would just take the minimum cooking level and take that. People have complicated legacies, so doctors get diseases named after them, and robbers get halachic concepts named after them. So Ben Jusai got the shear of, imagine like his descendants, like, yeah, my great grandfather was Ben Jusai. We talk about him in Hilchos Shabbos. So in this case, so let's say you cook something. Let's say you cook basar b'chalav, but you don't cook it all the way. You cook it before it reaches this level. So you say Chatz Yishir there. So it would be Bishul, but let's say it's done already. So is there an issue? Is there an issue of achila and hanah on that creation?
What was the question?
You cook basu b'chalav, not fully. And now you stop.
It's a
qualitative Chatz Yishir. Now, whether there is such a thing as qualitative Chatz Yishir is subject to debate, but that's something many consider.
Do we find that in Shas ever?
Shas, it's unclear explicitly, no. In Achronim, you find it in great detail. Like I said, you could talk about Chatz Yishir all year, and you will not fulfill Chatzi of Chatz Yishir. You know, the mace of Chatz Yishir b'yado is the infinite sugya. But once you start talking about it in this way, of qualitative, it becomes very hard to determine what counts and what doesn't count. So, for example, I think the Levush Mordechai pointed out, you know, there's an Isser in the Torah to marry two sisters. So maybe we should say, you shouldn't be allowed to marry one sister. You might come to marry the other one. So most people are makel on that. So you have to figure out exactly where do you enter into the consideration of whether it's an actual step towards the Isser and where it isn't. So here, okay, so here, this is an interesting question. If you cook something partially, so you're not going to be chayiv malchus for that, right? Because it didn't reach shmeichel ben drusai. But the Prima Gadim separately talks about that question, that maybe it should be asur ba'achilu ba'hana because of the din of Chatz Yishir. And others feel, sorry? But basar b'chalav, in order certainly to have the yisur hana, it's got to be a result of the prohibition of cooking.
Right. Okay.
So maybe it's not that. So that's an interesting debate also. Right. So it's another application of Chatz Yishir. So all of this, again, comes back to the question of, do we say Bishul basar b'chalav is a siag? Or do we not? And if so, are we willing to allow that to have any ramifications, any nafkaminas? Okay, so far so good? Mm-hmm. Anyone following? Okay, so now, let's plug that in into the new Makaris we sent around today, we had a chance to see, which goes back to our Mishnah. So, says the Mishnah, Kala Basar, Asu Levashal B'chalav. So all basar is prohibited to cook with milk, with the exception of dagim v'chagav. So with the exception here of fish and grasshoppers. So what does kol habasar come to include? What is the word kol telling us? Which the Gemara is going to inform us? That what? What's awesome?
All except for the exceptions that are explicit, I guess.
So therefore, what is included?
Chicken.
Chicken, right? So if we're saying chicken and chayes, so we're saying that this Mishnah is talking about both, as the Gemara makes clear, is talking about both the Daraisa prohibitions and the Darabanan prohibitions. So this Mishnah is telling us what is prohibited in the Torah and what is prohibited in the Darabanan also. That's what it sounds like. So then if I read the words, so tell me what I come up with. So kol habasar. Kol habasar meaning basar behema, basar chaya, and basar of. Asar levashel b'chalav. So am I permitted to cook chicken and milk? What would you say? Sounds like no, right? If kol habasar comes to include everything, and chicken and milk is therefore included, and the Mishnah goes on to say, we're talking about the prohibition of Bishul, one would think that I should not be allowed to cook chicken and milk. And if you read many of the Rishonim, that's certainly the impression that you get. You read the Rashba, you read the Ritva, that's certainly what it sounds like. They point out that the Mishnah is not coming to exclude Achila. It gets into our whole discussion that we had already, that both in terms of the Chumash and in terms of the Mishnah, why we choose to focus on Bishul. But okay, so Bishul is a way of getting to Achila. But of course we mean Achila also. But it certainly does seem like we mean Bishul. But what about the Rambam? So anyone see the Rambam? What does the Rambam say about this?
Not Nisar
D'Oraisa. Not Nisar D'Oraisa or Nisar D'Rabbanan. That when it comes to Oaf, and so Oaf is a prohibition mid-Rabbanan, and the prohibition mid-Rabbanan is Achila specifically. And that there's no prohibition to cook Oaf b'chal. So if you saw there the Magid Mishnah, and there are others, Yamshul Shlomo, Meshach, others who raise the question that there's something that doesn't seem to be fitting here. And you could ask the question from a couple levels. First of all, the language of the Mishnah is awkward. Like we just said, it sounds like you read the Mishnah, it's saying that we're talking about Taraisas and Drabbanans in the same breath. And we said that you're not allowed to cook them. So to exclude the Isurei Drabbanan from the Isur of Bishul is interesting. Secondly, we've also been saying that kol d'tikun rabbanan ka'in d'oraisa tikun, that ka'in d'oraisa tikun, that Chazal, when they created an Issur d'rabbanan, they would generally pattern their Issur d'rabbanan after the Torah prohibitions. So in the case of the Torah prohibitions, if the nature of the Torah prohibition is a three-pronged prohibition, no cooking, no eating, no hana, so when Chazal wanted to add on Oaf, why didn't they do the same thing? Why didn't they make it the same way? So that's also hard to understand. So what's going on? What's pshat in the Rambam? And the Shulchan Aruch brings it like this also. So it's an important point to consider. And Siman Pei Zayin. So if all indications are, reading this Mishnah, you would think that the Issur Darabanan of Oaf should be treated the same way as the Issur Daraisa of beef. So why is it that that's not what the Rambam says? And that Oaf should be prohibited only by Achila, but not in Bishul. Any thoughts, Yossi?
Because based on what we've been previously saying, that it presumably, if you were going to say that it's Aser to cook chicken, it would be a gazera and a gazera.
Ah, okay. So I wonder if that's how you could explain this. Right, that maybe you could say that the Rambam is coming from the consideration of Gezeira le Gezeira. That if you say that Bishul is a Gezeira and Oaf is a Gezeira for Behema, so then maybe to create an Isser of Bishul Bishul Oaf, that that would be a Gezeira le Gezeira. Now, to say that is an interesting new test case for what we were considering from yesterday till now, because this is a new example. We said, all right, gezeira le gezeira, to apply that to Yisurim d'Rabbanan, so that we get all of the explanations work if you're dealing with Yisurim d'Rabbanan. But if we're dealing with Yisurim d'Oraisa, so that was the big chiddush of the Prima Gadim, which sounds very hard to accept. And we've given now some way to try to make it a little easier to accept, but it's still a big chiddush. This is significantly less of a chiddush than the Prima Gadim, because we're talking about whether Chazal would enact a gezeira or not. So that's a much easier question to consider than whether a din in the Torah applies. But the Chiddush is still there, it's just a much greater reduced than the Prima Gadim. All we have to say here is that Chazal did not make Gezeros on top of Gezeros. And that means also they did not make Gezeros on top of a Gezera, even if that initial Gezera is itself a Din Menator. So that perhaps is a... that might be a easier, much more palatable version of this chiddush that might be relevant here. There are a number of other explanations to this Rambam. There's a lot that's written about this. It's interesting that there are, Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about this, and his son, the Ksav Sofer, has a sefer and chulin, where they both have approaches which are actually the opposite of each other, but they're based on the same principle that also has to do with limitation on rabbinic law. But the way the Chassam Sofer says it, and I wonder if this could also maybe plug back into our initial discussion, that Chassam Sofer connects it to a Taz. There's a comment of the Taz that appears in a couple of places. In general, I try to avoid saying that a certain mucker is famous or not so famous. But in this case, it's not me saying it. Rav David Cohn has an essay about this Taz where he called it, it says the famous Taz. It says if you just refer to the Taz that's well known, you're referring to this Taz. And then more recently, he wrote a whole sefer about this Taz. He called it the Taz Hayadua. So forgive me for just calling this one Taz well known. But the Taz, in a few places, about three places in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, he says that even though we know that when Chazal make their prohibitions, so we know that Chazal are prohibiting things that the Torah does not prohibit. That we understand. So it's not a question that you'll open up the Chumash and you'll say, I can't find this Isser from the rabbis, I don't see it anywhere in the Torah. So of course you don't, because it's not in the Torah. The rabbis added it. But, says the Taz, they cannot prohibit something which the Torah explicitly permits. If the Torah says it's mutter, so then they cannot come and prohibit it. Which is a fascinating concept, and fascinating to discuss why. Maybe this is the kind of thing, maybe I'll fill in a little bit more on Sunday, a little bit why that should be true. Because it has also some interesting implications. So we'll say, like, for example, just to give one possible example of this discussion, that some say that we know, we mentioned an example of the Torah has a rule, the rabbis are allowed to even override Torah's mitzvos. So the rabbis can tell us not to blow shofar if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Right? So that contradicts Torah law. Because according to the Torah, you're supposed to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, whatever day it is. But the Torah never explicitly says, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, even on Shabbos. The Torah says, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and even that it kind of says in a roundabout way, in Yom Teruah. But let's call this explicit. The Torah kind of explicitly says, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Does not say specifically on Shabbos. So to take one day of the week off of the schedule, that does not contradict anything in Chumash. So when the rabbis say, even though we know that the din of the Torah would have applied to Shabbos too, but there's no direct contradiction between what the Torah actually says and what the rabbis legislated. So the assumption is that would not violate the Taz's principle. But some ask, there's a prohibition in general to play musical instruments on Shabbos and Yantif. A rabbinic prohibition. That we're afraid you'll come to repair them. So why don't we also have a rabbinic prohibition? We shouldn't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah on any day of the week. Shouldn't be able to blow a horn on Rosh Hashanah, on Yantif. So some explain, because that would contradict the Torah, to say you can't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah ever. That would be a contradiction to the Torah text. To say that should Rosh Hashanah fall out on Shabbos, then don't blow shofar. Okay, that was not originally the Torah law, but it doesn't actually contradict the text of the Torah. But to say don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah at all, that would contradict the text of the Torah. So in general, this is an idea that Taz made popular, probably predates him also, that the rabbis didn't come and prohibit something that the Torah explicitly permitted. So what does that got to do with this? So this is a big discussion, what is included in explicit, what is included in the parameters of this Taz. So some Sofer suggests that what is the language of the Torah when it talks about the prohibition of Bishul Basar V'Chalav? What exactly does it say? Lo Sivashel Gedi. Right, V'Chalav Yimo. So, suggests the Chassam Sofer, maybe the Torah is telling you that there's a very specific parameter group for this prohibition. And that it is, when we're talking about the Bishul Isser, it's about the Gedi B'chalev Imo. And that a Gedi, whether it means a young animal or it has other parameters, but an oaf, a bird, is not a Gedi. And it's as if it's saying, explicitly, this is a stretch, no question, but it's as if it's saying that the Isser of Bishul is specifically about this mother-child milk possibility. And a bird is not a part of that picture at all. So a bird was explicitly excluded from this scenario. So the Isser of Bishul, sorry?
What about a cow?
What about a cow? A cow could have...
Oh, with the fact that it doesn't
have right.
Not the
right, so maybe the bird is explicitly excluded. It's still a stretch, you know. Still, but that's how the Chassam Sofer suggests. So I'm also bringing it up because maybe this plugs back into our original discussion of what is the focus of the Isser. Is it about meat and milk? It's not really connected to it being anybody's mother specifically. Or is it specifically about the mother-child relationship and everything else is an extension from that? So this idea would maybe correlate to that point, that maybe the Torah is describing something specifically about the mother-child relationship, and the oaf is not a part of that, so the Chazal are not going to come and create a Isser Bishul oaf. But in any event, for our point, that maybe if you say Bishul Basu B'chalov is itself a Gzeira D'Rabbanan, on top of what might be a Gzeira Min HaTorah. So maybe that might be another reason why the Rambam might maintain that this is not a place for Chazal to create a Gzeira. Okay, so far so good? All right, so I want to review. We said a lot. I want to review everything we said. Maybe add a little bit more. Are we good to have it up here? That makes sense for everybody? Okay, so let's... Okay, we'll try to be mindful. So just to recap first, then we'll see how much time we have. So what did we discuss so far? So we talked about, if we assume that Bishul Basu B'chalov is a Gzeira, is there a concept of not having a Gzeira on top of another? And we saw that the Prima Gadim had such an idea, not combining the Gzeira Daraisa of grapes for a Nazir and the Gzeira Daraisa of Chatzi Shir. And said that's a pella, like Rabbi Svengel said, but we had discussed yesterday a little bit some precedent for it, and we suggested maybe also there's a precedent for it in a Rishon, that maybe Rabbeinu Tam is saying that when he says that there's no Isser Bayira Bayimatse by Chametz derivatives against Rashi and against the Riva, because maybe that's what he's suggesting, that you can't combine two distance prohibitions, even if they are both Torah prohibitions. So if that's what Bal Yirah is about, and that's what Kol Machmetzis is about, it doesn't make sense to consider the two applicable in the same, to put the two together. So if that's the case, so then we then transfer the question. So if Bishul Basu B'chalav is indeed a Siag, and the Prima Gadim says you wouldn't combine Chatzi Shir with a Siag, so what would the story be for Bishul Basu B'chalov for Chatzi Shir? That's a very practical question, a much more practical question than grapes for a Nazir. So indeed, it's a big machlokis achronim about the liability involved, or about rather the prohibition involved. There's no liability for Chatzi Shir ever, but about the prohibition involved in cooking a Chatzi Shir Bishul Basu B'chalov. Some were mekel like the Chazon Ish, some were machmer like the Menachos Chinuch. And the Prima Gadim is among those who discussed it. We saw it was interesting that he did not just simply transfer over his logic there and say that it's a siag l'siag. And maybe he doesn't sign on to the whole idea of Bishul Basu B'chalov being a siag. And what was indeed his perspective? So he talked about the question of whether there's a realistic concern of combining the two halves. That maybe it's just when it comes to eating, there is a concern, because normally two halves, two actions separated by time, should have nothing to do with each other. But by eating, there's a concept of Kedei Achilas Pras, and maybe that brings the two actions together. And there were others who said the opposite, like Shul Mikutno, who said, no, two actions are always together. It's just that by eating, there's a Chiddush that eventually they expire and they have to be restarted. And here... that's the question. So maybe Bishul Basu B'chalov should always be considered connected. And then we mentioned there's also a question of qualitative Chatzi Shir. What if you cook something, Basu B'chalov, you cook it only less than Meichel Ben Jusoy, so it's a Chatzi Shir of the degree of cooking. So then what should the story be? Should we say that there we should also consider it different, or should it be subject to a prohibition of Achila and Hana Min HaTorah? So that was a machlokas there also. The Prima Gadim got involved in that question too. So then we wanted to take the whole question of Siag L'Siag and Bishul Basu B'chalav and apply it back to our Mishnah. That our Mishnah, if one reads it straight, it would sound like it means, together with the Gemara, it would sound like it means Kol HaBasar, that all Basar, Daraisa, and Rabbanan, therefore including chicken, is Asu L'Vashal, you're not allowed to cook it. Yet, the Rambam's opinion is that the Rabbanan Basar of Oaf is only prohibited in eating, is not prohibited in cooking. Raising a question of how do you read the Mishnah, why don't we say Kol Tikkun Rabbanan Gein Daraisa Tikkun, etc. So we mentioned a few possibilities, but one of them is that maybe it's a concern of gzeira l'gzeira, that if cooking is itself a gzeira, so to cook chicken, then maybe that's two steps removed. And that's a significantly reduced chiddush from the Prima Gadim, because now we're talking about whether Chazal imposed a gzeira, and then the question is just, did they impose the gzeira when it's on top of an existing gzeira that happens to also be Minat Torah? So it's a much, much less of a chiddush than what the Prima Gadim was saying. And then we mentioned another approach to this Rambam, that maybe as the Chassam Sofer suggests, and the Chassam Sofer has a related but opposite approach, but as the Chassam Sofer suggested, that maybe this connects to the Taz, that when the Taz says that the Torah, if the Torah permits something explicitly, the rabbis cannot come and prohibit it, that maybe that's the case here. Lo sevashel gedi, the Torah is particularly telling you that the prohibition of bishul is about gedi, maybe it's about that kind of potential mother-child relationship, and therefore Oaf was kind of explicitly excluded from the whole deal, and therefore the rabbis are not going to come and prohibit that. When it comes to achila, that is not addressed. Okay, so far so good. Everyone follow? All right. So just to maybe call attention, we'll say call attention a little bit to some points. We'll fill in where we'll go from here. So the Gemara then we'll continue with to go talk about the Isser Ha'ola, about the issur of having meat and milk together on the same table and what the parameters are. So now the Gemara is going to explicitly bring up Gezeira L'Gezeira, so we'll plug in some of the what we learned about Gezeira L'Gezeira into the words of the Gemara and see how we have some different understandings. It's also important to appreciate, just as background here, that the question sometimes when the Gemara asks, when we have this discussion of Gzeira L'Gzeira, so there are some Rishonim who maintain that there are exceptions to this, that sometimes you do find Gzeiras on top of each other. Tosfos is one of them, Tosfos over here. Right, if you saw Tosfos Mana Timra, here on Kufdal Man Aleph, so Tosfos ends off, the Yesh Mekomos Nami, the Gazrin and Gzeira L'Gzeira. There are times when we do have one on top of the other. No, we're not concerned. It's not our job to try to compare one to the other, except where Chazal do, because it's all beyond us. So I'd like to say more about that. We'll get back to that topic about what we can compare and what we can't compare. But this assumption that there are cases where we do have gezeiros on top of each other. So there are other Rishonim who say like that also. So Tosfos and Shabbos says like that by Hutzah. You find it in a few other contexts. And there are other Rishonim who don't subscribe to that. And essentially, the Gemara sometimes, when this topic comes up, and it sounds like something is a gzera l'gzera, so sometimes the Gemara will say, no, that's not a gzera l'gzera, but that's all one gzera. So these two steps are really all part of one gezerah. So when it sounds like there's a gezerah, a gezerah in the Gemara, so some Rishonim will say, yeah, this is an exception, this is a case where we do make a gezerah, a gezerah, and sometimes other Rishonim on that same Gemara will say, no, this is a case of chad gezerah. So just to give that background, that sometimes the Gemara will say it's one gezerah, and sometimes the Rishonim will use that and address apparent exceptions, and therefore say there are no exceptions, that when it sounds like it's an exception, it's a case of it's all one gezerah. Now, what does that mean, to say it's all one gezerah? So here you find different impressions in the Rishonim and in the later Svarim, that it may mean that just when they enacted the gezerah, they made it in a broader way, and includes even cases that wouldn't directly lead to what they're afraid of. but they included other things.
I don't really address the fundamental point of there's a concept of ego 0-0, or there's a reason behind it.
Right.
So just saying, oh, here's all 1-0, technically doesn't really address what happens to the reason. Why would I go there?
Well, it does. The question is, we have to still just account for how it addresses it. Because we have to figure out what exactly is the problem. That's part of what we've been tracking this week. And then the question is, how would it help to say Chadi Gezeiruhu? So if the question is, would they come and make a new Gezeira on top of an existing Gezeira? So if we say there isn't enough justification for it, so then that's part of where you'll find that problem, that, okay, there's not enough justification to make a new Gezeira if we're only motivated to help out a first Gezeira. But if they all made it as one package, so then we don't need a justification for a second Gezeira. So maybe, and here's where again we'll see divergent opinions, that maybe it was set up a certain way, that Chazal made a Gezeira and they said, okay, action A is going to risk action B. Action B is a Torah prohibition. We have to prohibit action A because it could lead to action B. But action A could happen in 20 different ways, and only 15 of them have any connection to action B. Right, but nonetheless, we're still going to prohibit all of action A. So it means that you'll have some things that are prohibited, which are prohibited, it sounds like it's two steps removed, right? They're only prohibited because they are included within action A. And action A is prohibited because it could lead to action B.
It sounds more like a little plug.
Might be a little plug, exactly. That's how some explain it. That maybe they just made an across-the-board policy, which doesn't allow for distinctions within its policy, but essentially it's one policy. Right? They made one enactment to prevent stumbling into action B, and that one action is across the board. So even if within that enactment you could say, well, what about this case, which doesn't have any real direct connection to action B, doesn't matter. They made a low plug exactly across the board policy that is going to cover all the cases. So then you could find nuances in the different Rishonim and others who present this. Does that mean that they had to formulate that in the initial formulation? They made a takana that included all this? Or are they justified at any point that if it all connects, they're justified in making a second Gezeira? Let's say if without the second Gezeira, the first Gezeira will not be tenable. Does that always justify then a second Gezeira? And saying it's all part of one package. So here you find different nuances in how the Rishonim present it, which may be relevant to that. So that is going to be important background for this whole sugi when the Gemara talks now about Ha'ala, which comes next here, and the Gemara is going to ask, is it Gzera L'Gzera or not? So you'll see some of the Rishonim are basically going to be addressing this question of, is it a Chad Gzera kind of situation or isn't it? So understanding that there are different parameters as to what is a Chad Gzera and what isn't, that is a part of the structure of that discussion. Okay, so you'll have some Makaris that will bring up that issue. That's a part of the background of that. And God willing, tomorrow, so we'll have a regular schedule, but we'll look at the beginning of Parshas Bo. All right, do we have a volunteer for Mincha?